True. You know, I'm having the big boy Jungrown on next week. I got to get ready for that. That's going to be fun.
Oh my, yeah.
Okay.
You'll probably catch him right after he got nerfed again too. So
that's,
it might be a bit of a downer.
That's actually true, dude. What if the nerf patch comes out minutes before I'm supposed to speak with Jung? Oh my gosh. That would be something. And we don't even know if Grinding Gear Games is going to nerf anything. I guess that's a great topic to start off with. Like, Grinding Gear Games, obviously, back in the office starting yesterday. I think they have Monday off or something in New Zealand. It sounds like that. They're back in the offices on Tuesday. Okay. They're going to address some things. They're going to hot fix things, and there's going to be a restart patch. Snoop, what do you think is top of mind for Grinding Gear Games?
Oh, my God. Well, that's a very open-ended question, isn't it? There are some things going on, I think. I figured we would probably discuss this a little bit. I did get hacked, or at least I got my account was logged in by somebody else. You know, I'm not sure exactly how to call that technically. It doesn't appear that anything was compromised. No personal data or anything like that. No email, no two-factor authentication, which is kind of works,
yeah,
but kind of not. It's kind of sketchy. It raised a lot of awareness for me. So I had to like start doing research, and then I found out there's been many things that have happened over the years, going all the way back 10 years. There's been a lot of issues with people having different things. And, you know, initially I just wrote it off as I'm an idiot. I didn't change my password for a while, which is definitely the case. And perhaps my email was compromised, and I wasn't going to make a video, because why would I make a video being like, hey guys, I'm an idiot, I got hacked, the end, you know. But then, you know, we were talking about stuff in Discord, and there are people who are aware of more than I am on this. And one look at the help and discussion forums over the Christmas break, and you see there's something going down, something big.
So. Yeah, I honestly think thank you for that video. Like, it popped up on my feed, and I watched it. I immediately changed my password just in case, right? And I bet a lot of other people did the same thing. I think that's what I said. I was like, that's the top of mind issue for me. I don't know if it's just magnified because so many more people are playing PoE2, and maybe there's more hackers trying to get that account info, or if it's, like you said, been happening for a long time and there's just something going on. And we don't know if it's because of third-party use or just passwords not being updated. We don't know what it is. And Grinding Gear Games, to my knowledge, they have not really addressed it, so it's kind of hard to really say, is it something to do with the site? Is it just something to do with, you know, the users? Like, what's going on? I know that there's been some crazy stuff on the subreddit today. I don't know if you saw that post from this morning.
I haven't. No. Tell me.
So I guess we can talk about it. And I want to preface this with saying we have no proof. And this obviously could just be someone trying to stir up drama. There was a post on the Path of Exile 2 subreddit claiming that hackers were somehow in possession of like a Grinding Gear Games admin account.
Oh, yeah. I did see that last night, yeah.
You saw that last night? I mean, I almost feel like that's just trying to stir the pot. But then I started reading comments, and people are like, I work for all these big tech companies, and yeah, we don't even remove admins.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I know.
Yeah, my gut response to that is that I would prefer not to embellish things beyond what is actually happening. I don't like it. I don't want to see, you know, I believe there is a real issue. And I don't think it's 100% user error. I don't think it's 100%. All right. That's speculation. And there's a lot of different angles to look at it. But when you start making posts like, oh, hey, you start spreading rumors about GG, you know, secret treasonous activity at the headquarters and stuff like that. I mean, what? I don't know. Now, the thing is, if that is true, then kudos to the person who posted it. If it is, then more power to them, and that's great. But I assume at this point that that's just made up. And but I'm not digging real deep into it. And I did notice that a lot of comments were taking it seriously. But the only good thing that really come out of something like that is just has more people engaged and talking about, more likely to talk about real issues too. around that.
Right. Yeah, because I really hope that this is solved. And Snowman, that really sucks that you had your account hacked. You lost, what was it, like your divines, all the items on your top tier monk and everything that you've had blasting.
Yeah, I'm a grinder, you know. I'd put a lot of work into the character, and a lot of people said in response, oh my god, dude, if that happened to me, I'd just quit. I'd just be done. I wouldn't even said anything, just shut computer down, you're done. And I'm not the only one, by the way. I'm not the only creator who was hacked. There were the reports of at least two others with a few thousand subs on YouTube who made videos, and another person made a reaction video to their being hacked, and they were very depressed about it. And I was more angry, actually, or more upset than anything. Not so much for losing it, but because I felt like I once I noticed that this was like an ongoing problem for years and that it was blowing up in a massive way on the forums, that kind of got me upset that there's just no way we can even get any help or response because it's Christmas holiday. And right. you just know the hackers turn on all the green lights over the holidays. They know what they're doing. They specifically time these things for exactly when the systems would be most vulnerable and be the fewest number of people in the offices. And that's why you can't get soft as a company, I think. You just can't get soft like that. You got to be ready.
Yeah. I mean, it's super unfortunate alongside that. All the economy exploits, and they just blew up over the break with the duping of Temporalis and all that stuff. I mean, that was, I am so like, just, I play game, I blast game. I would never think of like exploits like that, but people go all in on that. And it's so crazy. I mean, it's good that Grinding Gear Games released this into early access and said, stuff is going to be busted. Mm-hmm. You know, don't treat this as a real game yet. People are like RMTing though, which is crazy to me. Like in the early access economy.
Well, here, I'll say this. So there's basically like three levels of cheats. There's botting, there's duping, and there's hacking. Now, you're right. So for early access, and they're basically scaled like from least problematic to most problematic. For early access stuff, neither of the first two really matter. The botting and the duping, nobody cares. Because not really, because, you know, like you say, it's not going to be, it is going to be a permanent economy, but I don't think anybody's really going to care about it. It's early access. It's going to be wiping, not necessarily wiping things forever, but in our minds, it's going to be a wipe anyway. Hacking is different, though. That's why I shine a spotlight on that. That's a real problem, because that's a real threat to users. And that's going to create a terrible taste in people's mouths, you know, regardless of if it's a trial run or if it's the real thing. You know, you don't want to be getting hacked. I've kind of overlooked. I haven't really talked much about the duping thing. It is absolutely crazy how much of that's going on. And that was also timed perfectly well. It was like nobody in the office. And that one's obvious. I mean, there's no speculation on that one. That one's clearly the cat's out of the bag on the duping Temporalis and other things. The botting is just kind of an assumed thing that we just deal with in this space. Ever since, you know, played Diablo 2 or whatever, I knew botting was just a massive problem and that it's never going to go away. And I don't even think you can even necessarily combat that one in any massive way. So I just kind of take that one for a given, and I don't even really talk about it anymore. But the duping one is bad when it happens in, you know, real early in like economic situations. Early access maybe doesn't matter as much. So that's why I haven't been talking about that one. The hacking one is the one I really care about in this case.
And I'm glad we're talking about it, because I know, you know, quite a few people will see this. And I hope, you know, some people, I know GGG is aware of it, right? But I really hope it helps them prioritize it, or maybe send out a message about it, because I have been seeing it more than ever now, especially since your vid. So all well wishes to people getting hacked. I hope that is fixed.
We seriously don't need to make the whole podcast about getting hacked. 100%. It is what it is. And I hope I'm 100% with you on that. I hope there's a resolution, and I hope they do something. I definitely hope there's transparency, and I hope we get to people get their accounts back. There's a lot of people who are locked out of the game still. That's probably the most unfortunate thing in the whole process, is getting hacked and then getting locked out for 3 weeks on the account that you paid for, because it's actually not free to play at this very moment.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you'd have to buy another key and everything. You did get hacked. I know you, and you lost a lot of your stuff, but I saw a video like the next day or 2 days after of you like, bouncing back from everything. How's that been going? Did you start a new character, or did you continue on?
I started a new character. So first off, should take note that I didn't lose everything. You know, they didn't delete the character.
Right.
I still had a level 94 character. I decided to re-roll one anyway. I had a bunch of things in dump tabs that were worth up to maybe one divine each. A hacker's not going to care about those because they're not easily liquidable. But you can certainly, and they take up a lot of space. And they were all nice and pretty in my tabs already, so I was able to liquidate a lot. I still had actually a lot of divines worth of stuff left over. Also, me being a content creator in the space, you know, people are super nice, friendly, and people want to help a lot. And I always just, generally speaking, I just say, no, look, I want to have my own journey. I want to play the game. I want to grind it out myself. That journey is sacred to me. I think that's what makes the game fun. I don't really understand, actually, people who like to take the shortcut and, you know, whether it's RMT or whether it's just being gifted a bunch of stuff. And I do understand, like, for testing purposes and content creators want to test something or do, like, a giant gamble session, things like that, and it's not really their stuff. That's cool. Maybe put together, maybe even like community efforts, pooling mirror crafts and things like that. That's fine. But yeah, just being like given a bunch of stuff and cheating yourself out of that is not good. But yeah, being hacked is a total different animal. It creates a very different experience where, you know, you feel like you lost everything, and it wasn't your fault. It definitely wasn't your fault as it pertains to any one specific thing you did in game. Very important to make that discrepancy. I didn't gamble it all away with the double or nothing divination card craft. You know, I didn't die in hardcore, nothing like that. Yeah, but anyway, we'll just leave it there.
Yeah, so you're using a lot of, you know, interesting economic terms like liquidable and everything. And for people who might just be Path of Exile 2 players and aren't familiar with your, you know, most popular Path of Exile 1 content, Snoo, could you give people a rundown on what'd you say in your last video, earned your stripes with in Path of Exile 1?
Oh, yeah, yeah. This video drops very timely, I think. Yesterday, I did a trial of the Sekhemis with the Desperate Alliance Relic. And that is a sort of target farmable currency strategy that you can do. Well, if you like farming the Trial of Sekhemis. Somebody else made a video yesterday who talked about how awful the trials were or the feedback on there. So, you know, I thought that was pretty funny when I dropped the video and then you dropped a video on the same thing and yours is like, people hate this thing. And then I'm like,
and I love it.
Guys,
I
this is a crazy trials. Awesome way to, this is an awesome way to farm currency. And you're like, no, everybody hates it. And then, you know, we're talking like 12 hours later. Usually it's about mapping and, you know, different strategies like just around mapping. It's going to be different now because you got to like prep the atlas and stuff. I'm not 100% sure how I want to go about that. But with the Trial of Sekhemis, it's very straightforward. You know, you have a strategy, you have a relic, you're going to target farm something. You might get Grand Spectrums, you might get level 20 gems because those drop more likely there. There's some jackpot potential and there's some deterministic profit to be made with the relic to get the Against the Darkness jewel at the end, which unidentified sell for like 2 divines worth more than the relic, like for 3 weeks straight. That's been the case. So it's just a great way to, you know, if you're somebody who you got like you're kind of stuck. And you're in a rut, but and maybe you're kind of sick of mapping and doing breach all the time. But you to get upgrades, you got to pay tons of divines. So your character's strong enough, you can just do some trials and try something different. And just, you know, 5 hours later, I had like 30 divines.
Yeah, that's huge, dude.
Okay. I mean, so people just overlook that kind of thing, you know, and it's nice when you just plot it out. You take, here's the setup. Here's what I did. Here's a Twitch VOD. You can watch it all on the description if you want to, you know, check for any funny business. But here's the highlights. Here's the conclusion. Here's the gambling. Oh, my God. We hit this crazy, unidentified or identification on one of the jewels. Did hit one that's probably worth like 100 divines, actually. Spirit max mana against the Ooh. Darkness. Crazy. Yeah. But I don't count that, of course, for the result. Anyway, yeah, those kind of videos have been the ones that people really liked from me. And there were a lot
them,
of them at the time.
Very, very ethical and like trustworthy currency strategies that are also kind of off meta, especially like Path of Exile 1, looking through your catalog. And I'm sure that'll expand out in Path of Exile 2 as more content is added and you figure out more stuff. But like Trial of the Sekhemis, yeah, lots of people don't seem to like it. some people do, and there's a lot of potential there. Like, I know I released a video saying, like, oh my gosh, it's so polarizing. It's the book. It is.
Yeah, you did.
15. Okay, there's like 2,000 comments on that video. 95% are like, true, it's terrible. Uh-huh. It's the worst. And like in my video, I'm like, I hid my opinion at the end. I was like, I'm gonna put it at the end, you know, just to make sure I can get all the opinions out there. Cause I love it, man. Are you a fan of the trials, or are you on like kind of the
No, here's what it is. Okay, so here's what it is. It really is like a test of strength or a test of will or a test of perseverance and endurance. Like you've got to do it many times. And me, just like any other regular person, it's important not to forget that the first time you do it, when your character's undergeared, it's really brutal. And you're going to fail it like multiple times. And you're going to get frustrated. And I remember I tried like different relic packages. The nice thing about how they set it up is that even when you slowly progress, you unlock relic slots. But if you don't know to use those and how to use them, like if you have no background knowledge on Sanctum, that can maybe be kind of a problem. I'm not going to talk about the ultimatum side, the Chaos Trials, because that one was just harder in general as I understood it. And so I just didn't even bother with it. But I knew the Sanctum mechanic from POE 1 and the background and how to manipulate the relics to give myself the best chance. I tried a crazy defensive package. You know, some of those relics had like 50% increased defenses.
Yeah.
But that was really powerful, but didn't necessarily automatically solve the problem. So, you know, I failed it quite a few times on the fourth try. A lot of people were buying carries. It leaves a sour taste in the mouth when you have to buy the carry and you feel like, you know, you're putting your trust in some stranger, unless you become friends afterwards, I guess. But, you know, it's not the way a lot of people want to play, right? And they want that. But I think one of the big questions was for GGG, is this intended for it to be as hard as it is? And are you actually expected to not unlock, let's say, your fourth and final one, where like the average player is expected to not ever even unlock it?
Right.
Or is it an expected thing, kind of like it is in POE 1? You know, you might fail a couple times, but, you know, third or fourth try, you're probably going to get it, even if you're kind of undergeared.
Yeah, it's a big question, and one that I think I'm airing after thinking about it and reading these. I didn't read thousands. I read maybe hundreds of people debating this topic a little bit. I really do think it's intended. And I thought a little bit more on the entire endgame progression today as I was walking around my house. And thinking about my experience and me really wanting to push and like fight the Arbiter of Ashen at this point, I've basically given up because it takes a lot of maps, a lot of grinding to get there, a lot of luck, it seems, to get to the Arbiter of Ash, even though...
And Citadels.
Citadels, which maybe we can talk about. Maybe someone's cracked those Citadels.
I already know I already assumed the right answer. I got lucky. I naturally assumed the right answer on that.
You did. Well, just briefly, we can talk about that in a second. I think that grinding your games is pushing the Arbiter of Ash to be like the very last piece of content that you fight. And before that, you like fight the breach boss and you fight the ritual boss and you do all these other things. Whereas me, I'm thinking of, oh yeah, the Arbiter is the core content. I should be able to get to that first before fighting all this extra stuff. And it kind of dinged in my head like, oh my God, maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm supposed to go and do all these other things. And by the time I fight these bosses, then I'm there. And that's what they've always been thinking of, you know, how people would progress. You know, maybe that's wrong. Maybe that's
I think in like, if you were to play SSF, I'm under the impression maybe the Arbiter, like to unlock the Arbiter final tiers, maybe the ultimate pinnacle boss of the game. Like you're expected to finish that one last, perhaps. Yeah.
It seems
I don't know,
like...
man. You would have to pick up 1,200 Simulacrum Splinters and not fail a single time to unlock the Delirium Blood all the way through. So I don't know. It's a little questionable. The Breach one is easy for everybody, though, because I mean, everybody loves Breach and there's so many Splinters that drop. That one seems to be everybody's first unlock. The audience with a king is a rare occurrence, I guess, and costs a lot of favor. So maybe that one's kind of, I don't know. It seems kind of really balanced or fairly well balanced to me as far as, you know, progression. I remember in the reveal, they said there were 7 different endgame systems. The Trial Sechemist, the Chaos Trial, the 4 major league mechanics, and the Arbiter was the last one. And so in my mind, I was like, okay, those are just all on an even playing field, I guess. they're all basically equate, and you can pick any one of those or two of those at once and pursue them. And you're probably going to make a, you know, if you're in trade league, you're probably going to make an equivalent amount of currency based on, because the market's going to correct itself constantly in that respect.
Yeah.
If everybody hates one of them and it's less lucrative, fewer people will do it, so that more people, or that the, those who do, will get more out of it if they do it.
Right. And your progression through them so far, obviously you lucked out on the Citadels. Have you fought the Arbiter of Ash yet?
Yeah, I fought him early because I just bought the fragments
back
when they were cheap. Dude, I bought the fragments when they were like 10x a piece or something. Yeah, they were.
What?
I don't know. I don't know why they were so cheap at the time. But crazy, I mean, man. To be fair, I'm talking about a time when like divines were worth 6x a piece. So.
Right. Okay. So this is very, very early.
Exalts went real far at that time. They were real far.
So
on the Citadel
piece, how did you crack the Citadel? What's going on here? Because I've heard a lot of theories, dude.
Right, and I made a short video that might have been, it definitely got overlooked by a lot of people, might have been one of the most valuable videos I made in terms of like putting information out there. So I will go ahead and say it here. About a year ago, Jonathan was being interviewed about the end game progression for the Atlas. Somebody said, you know, this looks a lot like Delve, the way this is set up. And like, exactly, that's exactly what we had in mind. It was inspired by Delve. And so the question was, I can't remember who the interviewer was at the time. They said, so if it's like Delve, does that mean you want to go like far from the start? And that you're going to have better results? And they said, yes, it's basically what we have in mind. So the further you go out from the start, the more content you're going to see, the better the results will be. And then the interviewer tried to get specifics out of it, but they couldn't get it. You know, of course, he's going to keep that hidden. So I took that to the bank. I said, okay, well, the last thing I'm going to do is try to clear everything in my vision. I am just going to take one direction. I don't care which one it is, south, north, east, west. And we're just going to go, baby. We're just going to all the way there. 20 screens away, you know, just zoom out the direction. And you know what happened? I didn't see any Citadels for a little while, and then suddenly a couple popped up, and then a couple more, and then they started popping up with more and more frequency. And before you knew it, when I was about 10 to 15 screens away, you know, fully zoomed out 10 to 15 screens away from the start, I was seeing up to 3 Citadels on one screen. Okay.
Really? So,
yeah, they pop up like candy, dude. They're just like candy. I just took it for granted. And then I kept seeing these videos like, hey, man, you gotta check the position of the corpses on the towers, and you gotta, you know, look at this and that. I'm like, what are these people on? I don't know about that. I don't know about all that. I just find them. Like, they're just there. They just keep going the same direction. They're just there. Well, I don't know what you guys are. The water, the mountains, doesn't matter. The towers, I clear towers. I do tier 15. They're just there. And it just kind of occurred to me, I think that there's not really any secret sauce to it. It's just set up the same way Delve is. It's just programmed for them to spawn more the further away you get. That's my guess.
That would be hilarious, because these theories literally are running rampant throughout the community. Like, people are legit under the impression that it is pure RNG, no matter how far you get out. That's basically all I've seen. And then the corpse theory took hold, and I think a lot of people thought it was crap, but then, you know, conspiracy theories, as they do, they take root, and lots of people say, oh yeah, actually, this is legit. Okay, I had this one scenario where it worked, so it's definitely true, right? Ran throughout the community. So
like the hacking, dude. It's just like the hacking. I found another person who got hacked the same way as me, so it must be true automatically. All right.
Exactly.
Last comment on the Citadels. I obviously talked to a lot of people, and we started, once I shared what I thought, we started combining heads and realizing that there were several people in my community who hadn't found any Citadels, and it ran like as many maps as I did. So, of course, my first question is, well, are you just clearing around the start? And I swear to you, like every single time, they're like, yeah, I've just been clearing around the start. I said, okay, we'll try going straight out. And they do that. And they're like, one day later, they're like, dude, I found my first Citadel. Oh my God, I found my third or fourth Citadel. Dude, oh, I can't believe it was that simple. And in virtually no cases, not the case where somebody, like a couple people who've cleared just around the start, have found a few Citadels.
Right.
I think there's somebody who said they found a Citadel like 2 screens away from the start or something, but it's really rare. Really, really rare. In most cases, they're just not seeing it unless they go very far. And then they're seeing a ton of them.
Right. My boss brought up
towers and stuff is another thing that might be it, but anyway.
Right. That does make sense too. My boss brought up that he thinks it kind of combats what Grindgear Games was going for with the towers and you wanting to use the towers and then do all the maps around the towers, and it like extends the progression out to you getting to the citadels. Because if you use a tablet in a tower and there's maybe two towers and you really juice up an area, you're gonna spend, you know, 20 maps in that area for, it's quite a long time, because 20 maps in PoE 2,
yeah,
a lot longer than PoE 1. So that also extends how long it takes to actually expand outward and start finding those citadels too.
I do think that mechanic is really antagonizing for completionists, because a completionist is going to see a map right next to the other map and they're like, okay, so I need to go this way to get away from the star, but there's a map right there, dude. There's a map right there. I got to do that map. And then it's like it's like Meyer or some garbage map, and they're like, you know, just skip it anyway. Like, come on, get out of there. Skip it. Forget it, you know?
And then you see a savannah. You know, like two maps away, and you're like, oh, but I gotta run that savannah. I gotta branch out, okay? You know?
No. On the flip side, there's like, oh, there's three towers, like, this far away. It'll take me 72 maps to get all these towers, go around the mountain this way. But if I do that, then I can do this one savannah with 100% increased quant if I get all quant towers. And then they do it, and they only spawn one breach, and it's like, oh.
Or.
I'm wasting time.
They get the 10 breach spawn. And they die on the first breach and lose the map. Snoo, what do you think about the whole one portal mechanic? You pro?
One portal? Advanced?
Yeah, the one portal death endgame mechanic. What are your thoughts on that?
You know what? I'm actually a good person to ask about this, because a lot of people, I saw a lot of comments that they assumed that I would just get roasted by this mechanic, because I play a Magicfine character normally in PoE 1, and I take advantage of the six portal mechanic. There, you know, I probably even die on average like once a map on super high-end MF farming in PoE 1. Like even on like a mirror-tier character or something, I might still die. Because I'm doing maps that are extremely difficult, very punishing tier 17 modifiers, trying to do the boss and stuff like that. It's just, you know, people feel a certain way about T17s and PoE 1. The game's a lot easier than that, I would say, at the top end, once you have really good gear. With the current balance, anyway. Okay, may have to revisit this in a week, but... I like it. I like it a lot. And the reason I like it is because I'm actually kind of a hardcore Andy at my core. Back when I played Diablo 2 and Diablo 3, I was hardcore almost all the way. The game was easier to me than PoE 1 is at the very top end. And so I felt like with PoE, I needed to learn it more adequately. And I kind of got sunk into the softcore mentality. I really like trade. I've never liked SSF. But I loved hardcore trade in the Diablo franchise. But it seemed more appropriate there because the game was less spotty on like the one shots and stuff. There was still Detonate Dead in that game, those games, but it was less so. So I'm almost a little surprised I haven't done anything hardcore now, but I think it would just be less popular for like content viewing and stuff if I were to switch to hardcore. It's a much less popular mode. And again, not playing SSF, not a thing. So I actually like it. I like the compromise there. I like there being more stakes to the one portal thing. And that's just me personally. I understand people who don't like it because it's very jarring, you know, to go from six portals to one. How do you feel about it?
Yeah. In this case? Well, I'm a bad player and I'm fine. I'm fine with it, honestly, unless I'm in a boss map and I die and I lose the boss, then it is the, I feel like I just want to log off PoE after that, honestly. Because I, in like the Citadel case, I found a Citadel and I died in the Citadel before fighting the boss because I'm an idiot. And it was my fault. Like, obviously I made a mistake. I died. My character wasn't ready, whatever. And I just felt like, wow, I just spent, you know, 15 hours trying to find the Citadel. I screwed up in this one half second. I lost it. I'm probably not even going to find another with the rest of the time that I have of this current patch cycle of PoE 2. And it crushes me. But I also like the stakes too. It's cool because you do pay attention. You are more engaged in the map experience. It does matter more. Your defenses matter more. The way you play matters more. But I think with the loss of the boss and the current balance of monsters and their speed and their on-death mechanics, I'm leaning more in the I'm against it camp. And I was already trepidatious of it leading up to release. That was like the one thing in Endgame that I was like, ooh, I don't know about that. And I'm still leaning toward that direction.
I think it's a valid take. You know, you're trying hard not to be like, I'm just a noob, so I hate it. That kind of take. And I don't think that's what your take is. I think it's valid, what you're saying. And I absolutely am a little more sympathetic toward the whole boss thing. I saw somebody, maybe in one of your previous interviews, talk about the uniques and how they're balanced and how, like, maybe it was with Arrow you did
it
recently.
Arrow.
But
yep.
Yeah, I was watching that one. And there was a really good take in there from one of you two. It was about the uniques being worth kind of just valueless at the current balance. But then the boss uniques are, like, crazy powerful. You know, Ingenuity, Hand of Wisdom, and, the chests and all that from the Arbiter. And what this has done in the trade economy is made it is just priced people out of even learning the fights, you know. So people, you know, if you are somebody who's never done the fight and you get one of these fragments from Citadel and it's worth like 3 divines, you're going to feel like an idiot to run that. If you're thinking, dude, I could run this, I might get the big drop or I might not. And not only may I not, I might just die. And it just be totally in vain. And how am I going to feel about throwing away like 4 or 5 divines for an attempt after that? And so you just feel like a dummy if you don't just sell the fragments, get better gear. So on one hand, it's really nice that you can farm the Citadels for profit and you can really crank up the quality of your gear and stuff. I mean, you can just make tons of cash there. Yeah. And then you can build up a character. But there are some people who don't want to play it to that end. They don't want to put that much time and investment. And they're not excited about like farming 20 Citadels to get 100 divine character and then do the boss and just annihilate it like easily. Like, it doesn't matter.
You know, kill it in 5 seconds. You know, I saw I think it was a clip of Lily one-shotting the Arbiter. And I was just like, oh my God, I don't know if I like that. Like, I get that the fantasy in ARPGs, but the moment when I go up against that guy, I would want it to be for my first fight. Like, I'm not an Elden Ring fan, but I really enjoyed the campaign experience in PoE 2, where I'm going up against these bosses, I'm learning them, I'm dying, I'm learning, I'm having a lot of fun. You can't do that in the end game, or else, like you said, you're either throwing away profit or you're throwing away a lot of time. And for me personally, I could care less about the profit right now, but that time, ugh, that's rough.
Well,
that's really rough.
I don't know how this could fit in with like the lore or whatever, but it would be kind of a nice compromise if perhaps, if you fail the boss, you get to attempt it for an unlimited amount of times until you kill it, but you don't get any loot after the first attempt.
Or
the loot is severely diminished. Like after each death, you get 20% less loot, 20% less loot, and to the point where you just get nothing after. Like, I don't know. It would be nice, though, you know, something like that.
They kind of solved it in Path of Exile 1 with the story versions of the Exarch and Eater. And if you fail, all right, you go again. You fail, go again. You fail, go. I feel like that system, I'm pretty sure it was designed by the man himself who designed the end game of PoE 2, Mark. Mark, man, come on, bring it into PoE 2. Come on, just do it. Just lift it. I would love that so much.
That was pretty brilliant, the game design. Yeah, getting the fragment one more time. Just do one more T16, you get the fragment again.
Yep.
And the quest lines to begin with are extremely forgiving.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that'd be great just for... like people like myself who would want to face the boss once, and then I'm probably not going to farm it, right? I'm not going to farm the T4 version of it. I just want to fight it once, and that's like my pinnacle. That's like my completion. It's like, oh, I feel good. That's awesome. All right, next character time. Or I'm going to play again next league. I've done my goal. I think a lot of people might be like that. Like, you know, my dad, who I thought was a casual, but after I'm playing Tempest Flurry, Monk, Snoo, Ice
Monk
Strike.
Gang.
Okay, so you're Tempest Flurry 2?
Oh, I'm all in on Flicker Strike, Tempest Flurry stuff. Before it even released, I was all in on that.
I played my dad's Ice Strike Monk for 5 minutes. Dude, you're like blinking all around and you're flying and you're freezing everything. Oh my God, it was amazing.
You just wait till you get like attack speed gear and stuff and you're attacking Tempest Flurry like 10 times a second. You actually attack faster than you run. Or you jog.
So
you know,
you,
your
like,
jogging
your
speed is
Tempest Flurry to move?
Yeah. Your jogging speed actually becomes slower than your running attack speed. Come on, man.
What kind of gear do you have, dude? I'm never going to get that gear, bro.
You need to farm more citadels, all right? And you need to sell those fragments, and you need to get 100 divines worth of Tempest Flurry equipment and just have the time of your life. All right? Now you got a plan. Okay, I gave you the plan.
All right, I'll do it. I'll follow your build. I'll be the walking Tempest Flurry with Flicker Strike. I haven't even tried that skill yet. It looks really cool, though, in PoE 2.
Yeah, they don't really, like... they don't really play off each other. It's just kind of one decision or not. Either I'm jogging and flicker everywhere, or I'm Tempest Flurrying just straight through stuff. But the nice thing is about bossing is Tempest Flurry Bell is just ridiculous.
It is. I feel that already. Like the.
Well, you're not even doing cast on crit stuff yet either, right? No. Wait until you do cast on crit Eye of Winter and tie that in and have the mana, figure out the mana for that. Then,
I watched your video on figuring out mana because I'm having mana issues with no cast on crit.
Yeah, that one.
And I was like, I need help now, though. I just have Tempest Flurry. So it did help me a little bit, though. My monk feels a little bit better. So
back to your previous point, I think we're in good hands about the fragment and the bossing thing, though.
Yeah.
To me, this feels like, you know, half-baked end game trying to just push it out, get something good. I think they did a great job, by the way, with their sudden, like, you know,
shift.
180. Hey, let's stop focusing on the campaign. Let's get something working on the end game. I feel like people are being a bit overly critical about the current state of the end game, calling it boring or like half-baked or whatever. It obviously isn't half-baked in some ways, but and this is one way. I suspect in the very end, when the game launches, they're going to be much more forgiving about like first attempt boss, like first attempt arbiter is not going to cost you 100 maps worth of citadel target farming to try again. I don't think it's going to be like that, dude.
Hey, I hope so, man. And I've been one of those people that, because I'm so freaking gushy about the rest of the game, I've probably been like jaded and critical of the end game. And you're right. They literally said they started work on it in, I think, July of 2024. Six months. So that's like 6 years on the campaign versus 6 months of the end game. So it makes sense why one is so much more well done versus the other, right? So there's a lot of development time. And, you know, Path of Exile 1's campaign is... How long have you played Path of Exile 1? Have you been playing for quite a while?
I started in Ultimatum League 3.14, that league.
Interesting. Wow, I'm an older PoE player than you.
Oh,
interesting.
Yeah. Well, I started a lot of content creators start way back in the day, and then like many years later, they decide to pull the ripcord on content creation. I was kind of the opposite. I started in Ultimatum, and then I think at max 2 leagues later, I was like, you know what? I'm seeing all these currency earning guides. I'm doing the strats these people are doing. In some cases, I outperform what their results are. In some cases, they're just lying to my face. And I'm like, somebody needs to come in here and like show, like do a better job. We just need to do a better job with the currency earning stuff. We need to be more transparent. We need to have a little bit higher performance. Give people, you know, a better blueprint of what to expect, or at least give something more aspirational. Here's what you can kind of expect on the top end. Kind of stuff. And so I made the decision very suddenly to start making content around that, like we talked about earlier. Yeah.
So Ultimatum 3.14, 2 leagues later, that's Expedition that you would have started making.
Scourge. Expedition was the league after.
The league after. Oh. Mm-hmm. See, I don't know. I don't know anything. I get everything muddled together. That was a good
league. Remember those leagues.
That was a good league.
Yeah.
Demon Pet.
Favorite pet. You know, they were complaining about Magic Find then too, you know.
We're going to talk about Magic Find in a second, but I'm curious, dude. You were talking about playing D2, D3. Why start Path of Exile 1 so late? Were you still playing like D3 or other ARPGs around that time?
It's a great question. I am a certified Blizzard North loyalist. Okay? So I loved the Blizzard games. I still remember the day I was sitting in like 7th grade English class and they handed out these, what were they called? In the US, they were these sort of like, there was weekly readers, and then once a month they came out with a computer game magazine or something, dude.
Like
I'm
PC
dating
magazine,
myself hardcore.
Right.
Yeah, I'm dating myself hardcore here, but this was a while back, and it had a picture of StarCraft there. And I remember I was playing Age of Empires, and I loved that game back in the day. And then there was like StarCraft. Dude, this is like Age of Empires, but in the future, in space? What the hell? This is incredible. Incredible concept. And so I got that game, and then, you know, I had to, and then I discovered a whole online world, and then that was back when consoles weren't online, but then computer games were, and I just abandoned consoles basically in my mind forever then.
Right.
I understand it's not like that now, but that was the early 2000s. People were like, yeah, forget or late 1990s. People forget consoles. They don't even have the internet. And so, yeah, I just started playing StarCraft, and then I started playing Diablo, and so there were ARPGs. I started playing World of Warcraft later on. Many years playing those three games back and forth, and their sequels and things. So I didn't even try anything else. I don't know. It was always just an understood truth. Blizzard makes the best games. They just make the best games. Why even try anything else? And that was honestly kind of the truth for a very long time. But, you know, eventually you stop drinking the sauce and you finally come to terms many years later. And you keep hearing these rumors about this Path of Exile game and how good it is and how... And then you open up the skill tree and then you, like, go to the beach and you're like, dude, oh my God, there's no way. And then 6 months later you come back and you look at it again and you're like... okay, I guess. And then, you know, 5 hours later you're like, what, you mean it works like this, it does this, and then you can do this and this, and then wait a minute, I need to look this up now. And then, like, you know, 40 hours later you finished act 3, but you're like you're like science level knowledge on the game because you just researched that much stuff.
I loved it.
I just had to break through that, just had to break through it. Eventually it took me a long time.
Yeah, I think we're in the same pipeline. I was a D3 to Path of Exile player as well. I didn't play a lot of D3, though. I actually rage quit Diablo 3 because I was mad at the storyline with Asmodan, and I was like, this is so cheesy. I'm feeling something dark and gritty. Is there anything like Diablo? It was the Diablo-like meme in 2019. I literally searched, like, on Google, games like Diablo. Path of Exile was the first thing that came up, downloaded it, never looked back. Seriously, so crazy.
Yeah. I guess we're on the same. That's a lot of people's stories. I went ahead and gave it like the full details because I know that resonates with a lot of people.
Oh, 100%.
Especially the part where you look at the tree and you come back and you 6 months later and look at it again. I can't even tell you how many people would be like, "Yep, that's exactly what I did too."
I'm hoping that happens with a lot of people who've tried PoE2 out for the first time again. Like a lot of my friends IRL. They wouldn't try Path of Exile 1, or they tried and they bounced and they never came back for many years. And a lot of them have given PoE2 a go and they've loved it so much, gone through the campaign. And a few of them are like pretty deep in the endgame now. Like one of my friends, he played PoE 1 to Brutus, never played it again. He's now in T15s of Path of Exile 2.
Wow.
And he's like pushing his own build. And it's like, oh, this is so freaking cool to see, man. I'm so happy. And then there are other people who like get through the campaign and then they get to endgame and they're like, maybe I'll come back. And I'm like, no, they have your soul. You're in maps. You got to come back now, man. But we'll see what happens with the next big release.
You seem to know a lot of people in real life who play the game. I don't know. I got like one or two friends in real life.
I've infested my friend group and family. With all this stuff, like I said, my wife plays, my brother, my brother-in-law, my dad, his friends play it too. My dad's 60, and like he loved Diablo 4. He actually has the crazy take that Diablo 4 was harder than Path of Exile 2. Yeah,
harder to stomach, maybe.
Maybe, you know, he's just like, yeah, I feel like, you know, Path of Exile 2 gives you all the tools to play with more than Diablo 4. That's like his mind, I guess. And he's like an old school gamer. Like he used to play like Baldur's Gate 1, 2, Neverwinter Nights, and he was like a theory crafter, build maker in those D&D based games. And he's doing that kinda in Path of Exile 2, but more rudimentary. Like he doesn't have spreadsheets, but he's like pushing gems together and trying out stuff, and he's like, oh, that feels busted. That's good. And he has stumbled into Ice Strike Invoker. So you know?
Yeah, you have a family member like video games. This I've never said this to anybody. My family is almost like anti-video games. I am
really?
I'm a massive outlier in my own family. They don't play anything, dude. When I was a kid, I'd try to get my parents to play games, you know, with me, you know, like any kid would. And they're like, this doesn't look fun or whatever.
Does your family live in Japan or no?
No.
Is that why you moved to Japan?
The Midwest.
To get away
I'm from the Midwest. Yeah. I moved to Japan.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of Midwesterners like video games, but a lot don't. You know, they're maybe more outdoorsy or more, you know, practical applications. Yeah. You know, things like that. That's a nice euphemism for that. The best thing that happened to me for moving to Japan was internet speed. Bro, I'm telling you, I log in 3 MS. 3. Can you imagine? 3 MS.
Dude. How's that even possible?
I know there's some jealous people after they hear that. Yeah. How's that possible? Well, they got fiber optic and I'm in Tokyo, so.
All right, dude. So here's a story. Nobody believed me. Okay. I swear to hand on my heart. It happened. Okay. I don't just lie about this stuff. I have Comcast. You know, I'm sure you probably had Comcast or know of Comcast. Xfinity, as they've rebranded for some reason, right? Yeah. So I've got them. I'm paying for $1,300. Okay, Comcast. I get like 600 download and like 10 upload, which is ass, okay? So it's New Year's Eve.
This guy's talking in megabytes. I'm talking in gigabytes over here.
Screw you. Okay. Yeah.
I don't even refer to stuff in megabytes anymore.
That's crazy. New Year's Eve, dude. Some dude is digging a big hole in our front yard. And we're like, what the heck is going on? Like, we have a house. We own the house. We didn't get a notice. So it's like raining outside. There's this huge hole in the ground. And so I'm like, I got to go see what's going on. So I put on my coat. I go out there and this guy is in the mud. You know, his gloves are covered and everything. And I'm like, hey, man, what's going on? We didn't get any notice. Is there something happening? Like, is there something wrong with the sewer? And he looks to me and he says, no, we're putting in fiber. And I was like, oh, dude, I bent down. I was like, give me a high five right now, man. Let's go. Looked at me like all weird and then looked at his gloves. And I was like, dude, I don't care. You don't understand how amazing this is. Fiber in my front yard.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. Even if you live in the Midwest, you probably don't live near really close to a server hub. And so that's another thing. Like, even then, you're still not getting 3 MS. So that's why, like, living, like, in Tokyo, you get... I don't even understand why there's a server in Tokyo. Apparently, there is. I didn't even think... I don't think PoE is actually very popular here. Now it might become more.
They came to Tokyo. Yeah,
No. That's because they were introducing like the phone version to a console. In this case, was a very hard push. But I'm saying like the years leading up to this, when I first came to Japan, this was like 8 years ago. They had a server already here, and maybe I'm mistaken, but I don't think like PC gaming is not very popular in Japan at all. And that's the only platform they had the game on. So I was pleasantly surprised. Now, that's fine. I could have used a Korea server, or Singapore's is actually the second best. But that, like, if I connect to Singapore from here, that's still like 30 or 40 MS or something.
That's good.
So, yeah, that's, I can't believe it's still that good. It's unbelievable to me that there's a server here. And you know what's crazy? When I came to Japan, I was still playing Blizzard games. They have no server in Japan. Blizzard has no server in Japan. What are you guys doing? I mean, that's almost like the straw that breaks the camel's back. Like, what are you guys doing? Really?
Dude, that's hilarious.
The little old tiny, tiny company GGG has a server in Japan, and the massive Activision Blizzard doesn't have a server in Japan. Get out of here. That's just terrible.
I gotta know, Snoot, like, what is the... So I play at, like, 50 to 60 most of the time. What is the difference in feel between something like that and 3?
Well, the difference is you're a lot less likely to die in hardcore.
Probably true.
When you try to dodge roll out of that lightning ground effect, after death ground effect at the last split moment, I succeed and you fail.
Don't trigger me, man. Come on. What are you doing?
That's what it means.
Oh, okay. I see.
Man, I played on 70 MS was a good day back in the Midwest. A bad day was 300. And you know what's the worst part about it? Is it would just fluctuate. Yeah. Like in a minute's time, it would just keep spiking. I wouldn't even know. And then it was just random disconnect. And I can't tell you how many times I lost hardcore character to random disconnect. It's just infuriating.
Ugh. It's better now. It's better now than it was 8 years ago. I don't get a lot of random disconnects, but I do still get those darn spikes. Like, I know what you're talking about, where it will go like 300, and I'm like, oh, no, please. Don't do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is my character not responding?
Exactly.
Yeah, I would hope so. I would hope so. I keep thinking, I wonder if I moved back home. Is that internet still as crappy as I remember?
Probably. Comcast has like a freaking monopoly here. It's crazy. You know, I'm just happy they're putting in fiber. I'm hoping I get a better upload, because like 10 upload is bad, because I do 4K videos too. It takes a while.
The quality content. Yeah, I'm impressed that you got such good quality out of that.
There you go. Yeah, it works. It's probably destroying my computer though, rendering all that stuff. I don't know. I'm not a tech guy, so my 4090 probably won't be long for this world. But it's okay. I can just get a 5070 for $400, and it's the same power as my $2,000 4090. Thank you, NVIDIA. Really cool. Very cool. Okay, so also, I want to touch on one other thing. So we mentioned, obviously, there was the Tokyo Gaming Show earlier in the year, and you got to speak with Octavian. Was it just Octavian there, along with a few other GGG people?
Yeah, there was one other big, somewhat big name, like the equivalent of Octavian. I feel bad, I can't remember the name, because I didn't even know the person in advance. But when I was there, I asked Octavian, who else is here? And he said, oh, there's this person here, too. He's also lead coordinator of XYZ or something. And so I was like, oh, okay. I didn't know who it was. And I don't remember the name. But there were basically two of them who were kind of heads of what was going on. And then there's a lot of Japanese staff, because they needed, you know, people who speak Japanese.
Right.
And so they were kind of out of the loop. And it was really funny. Like, Octavian was there, and they didn't really have to do anything. Because they said, you know, when they went to Germany or whatever, they were playing a much more active role on everything that was going on. But because at the Tokyo Game Show, it's just anticipated that very few people are going to speak English there. And so you just have to hire a bunch of Japanese staff to you know, direct people and stuff. So the English-speaking only staff of GGG just kind of hands off. They're just there to oversee, to make sure there's nothing goes wrong. And I mean, it just kind of looked like they're getting paid for a full day's work to just sit there and do nothing.
How was it chatting with Octavian? I liked the interview. It was like off the cuff and everything. It was really good.
I wanted to have a different style interview with him. I just wanted to, and I told him in advance. I let him see the questions in advance, and there was a lot of them. And we did actually get through a lot of them. And I said, you know, I want this to be more of a conversation, not so much just interviewing you, because I've watched a lot of interviews, and sometimes I feel like I'm just recycling the same information. I'm not, you know, I watch like a 40-minute interview, and then I get like 3 tidbits of new information. You know, it's like sometimes it's the same questions or it's the same style and stuff. So I just thought I'd make it, you know, I want to give people some, what would I want to see if I was a viewer? I kind of just want to see more of a conversation. Let's just go off the cuff. And so that's, and we talked about a different topic, the dividing player base, basically, between like the, you know, the casuals and the no lifers, you know, that sort of thing. And they're very different views on the games. A lot of no-lifers want to protect the game, you know, for it to be more like for them.
You're leading me into, like, the last big topic that I wanted to talk about, which is pretty near and dear to your heart. Yeah, it's the big division that's happening right now in Path of Exile 2, especially.
You
talked about, you know, like, especially Magic Find. You were very big on that in Path of Exile 1. What is your stance on what is going on here? Because I, as someone who's not really participating but is consuming, like, content and talking to people in private too, seems like there's a lot of just conflicting data going around and like facts. What the hell do you think is going on, and what's your opinion on what GGG should do, if anything, at this point on the whole topic?
I think the data that we have in POE1 is extremely well founded and sound on how Magic Find works there, difference between player gear versus area quantity and rarity versus, you know, the people have tested things with negative Magic Find jewels, and they've gotten some excellent data floating around there for years. POE2, there's probably, by default, you're probably taking similar systems, just plugging them in. So it's not a terrible idea to assume that certain things work the way you would think they would. But, you know, for example, Delirium gives quantity and rarity. to every monster. I don't know. It doesn't do that in PoE 1. So this is going to be going to have to require a lot of testing to figure those things out. How good is adding delirium to your breach maps? Magic finding could be really potent. Maybe it doesn't really matter. So I see there's a lot of different things floating around out there on magic find. A lot of extreme takes on it too. Yes. Some people really hate it. Some people really love it. I actually don't have any sort of like massive affinity for magic find. I've just always done it because it seemed like the most logical way to progress your character towards the end. I've always said there's two kinds of players. There are loot junkies. I think I'm actually coining Mark's term here. I think he said before, or Chris Wilson, say loot junkie. And then there's like power fantasy players. People who love spending time planning their character and thinking about it in terms of DPS, in terms of tankiness, path of building warriors, you know, those types of players. They're more the power fantasy. They're going to play the character. It's a means to an end. The means to an end is getting the strongest character, deleting that uber boss in 2 seconds, as you said before. The loot junkie doesn't really care about that. They're like, okay, the means to an end, it's nice to have a character that deletes things, but really, my goal is to drop as much loot as I possibly can in the shortest period of time. Whatever I have to do that, that's what I'm going to do. Picking up magic find rarity gear is part of that process. And so it's not like one end of the spectrum or the other. Yeah. It is, you know, it's a spectrum. And people who have the take where they hate magic find are usually quite severely on the like power fantasy preference of the game. And people who have a strong affinity for magic find are quite heavily on the loot junkie spectrum of the game. I am somewhere leaning to loot junkie, but I'm not like diehard over there. And the evidence of that is I like making builds. I like creating builds and looking at that. And I'll spend 24 hours. Well, not 25. I'll spend 8 hours straight in Path of Building, refining it to min-maxing that build as much as I can without even thinking about the drops, you know? So, I mean, there's evidence of that. But I like both angles of it. I appreciate both. But, that's yeah, nice. The whole rarity argument, I like the fact that something like that exists as a alternate progression point for the character, and this has been debated forever. There's some people who hate the idea that you're going to make your character weaker just to drop more loot. And there's some people who love that idea. And that's an age-old debate. And it's fine, you know, to have that debate. It's a good debate to have. I do think it's a bit of a... I think it's kind of a bad argument to say that rarity on gear is bad, but rarity everywhere else is fine. Because in the end, it's still all the same thing. If you think about it in terms of dropping as much loot as you possibly can, let's say rarity is not in the game on play. Let's say they just delete it. You know what I'm going to do? I'm still going to run magic find maps. I'm still going to be like, well, the best content to run is to juice up those towers as hard as I possibly can. Anything less is stupid. Why would I do it? If I'm trying to be as efficient as I can, I'm going to take rarity and quantity as seriously as I possibly can on the maps. Every single case of giving rare monsters an additional modifier, I'm going to do, because that increases the number of drops, the monsters. So anything else I do is stupid. Why would I run just generic content when I should be, you know, juicing up the monsters as hard as I can? So it's not a great argument to suggest that rarity on gear is the ultimate problem. I believe it is there's something to that, though, for the power fantasy side, because at least you get to keep your strong character intact. So I do understand that. But again, I don't think that just because you delete rarity from gear means people aren't going to look at the game in that way. That people aren't going to focus really hard on trying to drop as much loot as they can and tailoring their strategies towards that end. I certainly will be. I'll make videos on it. So that's what I do.
Both you and Arrow now have had like the most level-headed takes on magic find that I've seen across the entire community. And I've been asking people about it for like the past 2 weeks, 3 weeks essentially, because it's been such a fiery topic. Do you think that right now it's so heated because a lot of people rightly, but also not so rightly, believe they hold a lot of power when it comes to the development of the game? And if they like say, hey, I don't want magic find in this game, I think it should be taken in this direction, they can amplify that opinion. Or the opposite, you know, oh, magic find is godly, let's have it in the game. They really think that they can steer the direction of Path of Exile 2 during this era. Because even during like Affliction, even during, honestly, Calandra with the whole loot goblin thing, I don't remember it getting like, it's like 4 weeks now of this. Seriously, since it was discovered that item rarity was powerful in a way, it's just been discussion about it. In Calandra, I feel like it was 4 days of crapping on Chris Wilson on the subreddit and them doing those emergency passes. It was gone. In Affliction, it was just... Actually, people liked it in Affliction. People were like, oh my god, look at all this stuff I'm getting. This is insane. This is crazy.
Well, the reason is because you didn't need a magifying character to drop way more loot than normal in Affliction. Mm. So I admit that Calandra was the most egregious case of the FOMO that comes with needing magifying on gear. That was 100% the case. Things like Scourge League, Affliction League, you still dropped a boatload of loot with or without magifying. So everybody got to have a piece of the pie in that case. And it's absolutely true that the whole crap on magic fine argument is in almost every case over bloated. It's become like a scapegoat to loot problems in general. People say, I'm not saying it's 100% the case, but it is really over bloated in some cases. Now your question is, do you think that GGG listens to the player base and makes changes? Of course, I do think to a certain extent, but I think that they listen to their internal developers more. And my evidence for this is that, you know, Jonathan was talking a lot about rarity and the internal debates they were having. It was a very contentious topic they were having about how to treat it in Path of Exile 2. They ultimately made the decision to remove quantity on gear completely. And, you know, Mark was for it, I think. Jonathan was kind of on the fence, and a lot of other developers, they were saying, I can't remember the exact framing that he used in some interviews, but basically it was a very contentious topic and they ultimately decided to remove it. I have a feeling that they took the player base's opinions into account here, but that they were probably leaning much more heavily on their own because they trust their own opinions well. And I think that's one reason why we love them as a company, because we believe that it's being headed by actual competent people. It's a bit ill-timed to say that with the whole Christmas break duping hacking thing, but in terms of balancing the game, We all are pretty confident about how they're handling things.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a fair take. And it's very nice to say, you know, before everything is nuked from orbit in the next few days, Snoop. So great idea to say it now. Yeah. So people can quote you, you know, on Twitch and on YouTube. Like, oh, wow, Snoop says we should be very confident in them nerfing Archmage by 90%, you know.
I'm looking forward to the comments about that like a week from now after the nerfs. They deleted my XYZ build. What is this idiot talking about?
We've been going for a little over an hour, Snoo. One more like bigger question for you. So there a lot of people, I watched Palsteron's video earlier today on predictions for the patch that's incoming. And it was very focused on nerfing builds, changing builds. Like, okay, this is going to get nuked. This is going to get nuked. This is going to get nuked. I'm of the opinion that I don't think they're really going to do a lot of balance. If anything, I think it's going to be bugs. It's going to be like the hacking stuff. Is there anything in your opinion that really merits getting nuked from orbit? Like now? Like Archmage. We see 50% of the top 1,000 players are Stormweaver. I don't know how that translates to all the players, but is there anything that you really want to change? Because they're going to add a ton of stuff in 2 months or something with the Druid and the Huntress.
Right.
What do you think?
I think, first of all, I am not the greatest candidate to answer this question because I get very tunnel visioned into what I'm doing, what my build is. I don't actually, you know, I decided beforehand, I said, I'm going to make this build work. I do not know everything there is to know about Archmage, about, you know, different things that have been going on. There are a lot of other creators who are really plugged in to, hey, do you see this newest overpowered thing on this build? I kind of just ignore that a bit. I can answer your question to some extent, though. Let's take you back to whenever that Sorceress Comet cast on.
Yep.
Cast on freeze. Yeah. Off, a comet off, build got off. Obliterated.
Yeah.
So that was an example of it was at least GGG stated it as such. They didn't have time to balance those energy numbers, right? It wasn't even released the way it should have been in that case. And to me, that kind of makes sense looking back on it now that was maybe not quite working as intended. It wasn't so balanced. You kind of have to look at it from that angle. Do you think that this goes way beyond the scope of what they had in mind?
if it reaches a certain threshold where it's just way beyond that scope, it's fine. And for example, the cast on freeze nerfs didn't affect me very much because I had specifically tailored a character to attack very fast and freeze extremely often. And so I didn't really feel the punishment from that nerf. And so the more balanced state of cast on freeze and energy seemed more appropriate to somebody who was investing very heavily into that sort of thing. But to somebody who was trying to take, you know, maybe a lesser geared character who wasn't actually investing into that side of stuff and just kind of tack it on to their build, for them to be, you know, greatly enabled in that sense didn't make as much sense. So you look at it through that lens, yeah, you kind of can understand better. Let's take the Temporalis issue now, like Temporalis Blink. I heard a lot of takes on this, and I think one of the most sensible takes is this item was never meant to be duped. It's supposed to be an extraordinarily rare chase item. This idea that they're going to overlook Blink and Temporalis together is kind of silly to me. I don't think they would overlook that completely. So it's probably intended to be an interaction like that. You are being gifted this power by having a Headhunter or Mage Blood level unique to be with Blink, and that you're just kind of expected to, you know, have that level of power because you did that. So this is, I think, skewing some of the player base's mind that there's just a ton of Temporalises floating around out there, and they will disappear over time as the dupes get kicked off. But definitely a massive influx of that item has, I think, skewed people's perception of, you know, how that item should be interacting in particular case. So, you know, you have to look at a lot of variables. How aspirational is this item to get or intended to be if there are no hacking and duping? How much does a build have to invest into something to receive an immense amount of power? I don't think they nerf things to the ground. If somebody's investing a ton of stuff into it and they get a lot of power, that's fine. If somebody chased an extremely rare item and they get a ton of power, that's fine. That's the way the game's meant to be. You're supposed to feel like a god in the end if you do things to that extent.
Yeah, I already foresee problems for grinding your games. There's someone in the chat that thinks that Temporalis is just, you know, it's just an item they got. They got it for 20 div. That's not rare. Some people are not going to realize what happened and the fact that this item got duped out the wazoo, and suddenly it's going to be, you know, back to five. Or they're going to nerf it. Like, something's going to happen. And you're like, well, what the heck is going on?
There might be 100 times the number of Temporalises on the market that there should be.
Yeah.
100 times. And you think about it. Imagine if there were 100 fewer Temporalises. That item would be hundreds of divines right now in terms of expense.
I saw my first Temporalis build last night, dude. I mean, that looks more busted than the Lightning Warp Tornado Shot build from a few leagues ago. I mean, you're just flying and everything. It's so crazy. I get how I do understand. Like, maybe they want that at the top, the highest level. But you're right that it's like oozed into the rest of the player base that it's so prevalent and a lot of people are using it. Like, it's just not intended. Man, that's a tricky ass situation. Thank goodness for early access. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
What it's for, right?
Oh. We'll fix the hacks, we'll fix the dupes, we'll balance the game. We might take a look at botting.
Maybe.
And we'll do what we can.
Last thing, what are you most looking forward to coming up in Path of Exile 2? Any class or, you know, item type or piece of content?
I actually haven't given this question much thought. I'm definitely looking for, you know what? I don't know if anybody said this, but I am actually looking forward to seeing what Acts 4 through 6 look like. I enjoy the campaign a lot more in PoE 2 than PoE 1. I spent like 30 hours going through it, about 300 deaths, because it was the hardest experience I think I'd experienced for a while. I had a pretty rough go at it in Cruel, but it's because I never checked the vendor for god tier rare, low level rares. So that was my fault.
That's important. Did you get did you get this book, Snoo?
No, I don't have that book.
You don't have the it's the top tier supporter pack. It has spoilers for Act 4 and 5 in it. No, nothing for Act 6. But I'll tell you, Act 5, dude. It's looking good. I think you're gonna like it, dude. I think you're gonna like it.
I have a confession to make. I tried to buy the second tier supporter pack, but I had issues with it was an issue on my end. And now there's an issue with, like, on GG's end or Exala's end. And I emailed support, but I haven't heard a response in 3 or 4 weeks. So.
Oh, no. Usually they're so fast.
I just want to give them money. And I'm not getting any response. So And then later I got hacked and I emailed him again and I started getting no response. So that's where we're at currently on that. I'll keep you posted.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I hope support responds now that we're in the new year. You know, they're back in the office. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, screw the stuff.
Water under
the
bridge.
Beginning. Number one, respond to Snoo. Okay. That's what we want. Okay. About his $90 supporter pack or whatever.
wait. I'm trying to push against the streamer privilege narrative. Okay.
Oh, shoot. I'll cut it from the video.
I don't want people thinking that streamers get privilege. I just want to be treated like a regular player. All right.
No, I'll cut it from the video.
I don't need Chris Wilson holding that button down saying drop divine, yeah. Drop mirror, divine, mirror. We don't need that. I'm okay. I'll be fine.
You want me to export that and send it to Chris at grindinggeargames.com, right? That's a little snippet.
Yeah, you know, sure. I'll ask for a new button too.
Okay.
Enough gear anyway. Need a little bit more.
Okay.
Should
you
cut it?
You cut one of the best shorts I've seen in a long time of Palsteron farming Magic Find and ranting about it.
Oh yeah?
Dude, I was like, wait, this is a Snoo video. Why is Palsteron talking?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the funniest thing ever, man. It was really good.
I don't know what compelled me to do that. I was thinking about making a little highlight thing because it was so funny to me, like in the background. And I love listening to Palsteron. I rate him on the channel. I have a high respect for him. He and I disagree very stringently on the Magic Find debate. And that's a sign of a good relationship. The fact that you can disagree with somebody and still have respect for each other. But it was certainly funny as all get out. Just listening to that in the background. That was completely uncut, by the way. It was 100% uncut. That was the literal timing of his listening. I didn't overlay the sound or nothing. I was literally just listening to it. I had the NVIDIA save file for the last 5 minutes. I clicked save. And I was like, I'm going to do something with that.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah, I will link the short in the description to this video, you guys, because it is hilarious. You need to watch it. It's only like 50 seconds. It's good. It's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, well, Snoo, it's been awesome chatting with you tonight. Thanks for going a little bit over. I appreciate it. I know you said you had some time, so hopefully I didn't interrupt anything in your household or anything. So
I hope you got time to enjoy your relaxing time. You've been working so hard, man.
Oh, kudos. Well, thank you. It's 10:47.
Busting your butt.
I'm gonna go pass out on my bed after I chat with the stream a little bit. But thank you so much. Snoo, where should people check you out? Both YouTube and Twitch, right? Which is more important? Where should people go?
My YouTube definitely been more popular, but you know, I like people coming over to Twitch. That's fine. Yeah, SnooBay85 on both of those handles would be the handles. So a lot of people don't know what I'm doing. I'm usually doing kind of high-end farming stuff, making currency guides. I've been delving more into making build guide related stuff. I recently came out with a video of my 100 div build on less than 100 divine or less on a less than one divine budget. Just for fun, because I felt like it was unreasonable people saying you had to have 100 divines worth of gear to make build functional. And you and I are playing the same build. Are you using 100 divines worth of equipment on your Tempest Flurry Monk?
No.
Okay. Well, there you go. Some proof right there.
I am using 12 exalts, bought gear, and then the rest is crafted by myself.
You are playing the game right then. Playing it as intended.
As intended.
Now, wait a minute. One last question for you. Yeah. Are you a power fantasy player or are you a loot junkie?
Man,
are you on that spectrum?
That's a great question. I feel like... So the way I play Path of Exile 1 is I usually make one character a league. And my goal is always in that game to get like 36 out of 40 challenges or 40 out of 40. That's my goal there. Usually what that entails is me like downing, you know, all the Ubers once. But it's not like maxing out a character or anything. Like I usually don't really buy that much gear. I just get gear off the ground, a few lucky drops. Maybe if I make a few divines throughout, I'll buy, you know, a chase unique or something. But that's it. I don't really go with that min-max sort of thing. I just have that goal. I hit it and then I'm done. That's like Path of Exile 2. It's a little bit different. Because there's no like challenges, which I like to put myself against. The challenge that I put in my head was the Arbiter of Ash. But now I'm like, oh my God, I've spent like 120 hours and I don't see me getting there. And I'm having less time right now because like work is crazy. So I don't know. I don't know where I'd be.
Well, we might need to make it a triangle then with the third vector being a completionist. Maybe you're a completionist. In which case, my advice to you would be to stop completing all the maps around the start and go beeline straight in one direction. Maybe you'll actually start finding citadels, which means you can actually start farming the Arbiter, and all your dreams will come true.
Okay, but I got to do another augury, Snoo. I just got to do one more augury, okay? Like, it's my favorite map. The levers. Okay. I saw an augury with burning ground on it.
Hey, man, actually, you want to see how good Flicker Strike is? Do that on augury. I don't even dislike that map. That map is awesome for Flicker Strike. You just go...
Do you go through halls the whole thing. And doorways?
Dude, yeah. Well, you unlock the door in the middle, and then if you get a breach that goes out into the middle, it feels good, obviously. And then it going everywhere through that crypt, and like everyone else on a Temporalis Blink build, like, blink into a wall, blink into a wall, blink into a wall. And while meanwhile, the monk is just like...
Ooh, I gotta try out Flicker Strike. I gotta do it. Glorious. Respecking is pretty dang easy.
The biggest selling point. Yeah. The biggest selling point of this build is you are forced to magic find on less than optimal maps. Everyone else feels bad about running crypts and auguries and things like that. Not the Flicker Strike monk. We still feel good about it.
All right. I'm going to try it out. You've sold me on it. I'll leave a comment on your next build update video on my 15 Exalt Tempest Flurry Flicker build.
I did it on less than a Divine. You can do it.
I can do it. I can do it. Hey, Divines are only five Exalts. It's fine. Six Exalts, whatever.
Yeah.
All right, Snoo, it's been awesome. Everybody who's watching, make sure you go check Snoo out. SnooBay85, YouTube, Twitch. Make sure you like the video, subscribe to this channel too, and I will see you in the next interview. I think we're talking to Gavrin Gaming, or it's just Gavrin now, on Thursday. It's going to be fun. Thanks so much for watching. Talk to you all later.
Dude, thank you very much. We'll see you next time.